Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Readings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Fort Stockton Pioneer for Thursday, March 25th, 2021. None injured in ambulance fire. On March 22nd at approximately 2 p.m., a Pecos County EMS ambulance caught fire while transporting a patient to another EMS entity who was waiting for them at Ward County Hospital in Monahans. The medic driving the ambulance noted the flames coming from the passenger front side of the vehicle after being alerted by a bystander. The medic immediately pulled over and alerted his partner. They immediately exited the unit and removed the family member and the patient from the ambulance, ensuring everyone's safety on the stretcher away from the fire, while Blake Heflin called 911 and assisted. EMS attempted to put the fire out with an onboard fire extinguisher while waiting for the fire department. We would like to take the time to thank the bystander, Mr. Blake Heflin, on scene that assisted our medics, Monahans Volunteer Fire Department, law enforcement, and Ward EMS for their assistance during the time. We are truly grateful for that everyone is safe, Pecos County EMS stated on their Facebook page. It is unknown how the fire started at this time, as it is pending. The patient was then safely transported to the hospital, where another service was waiting for the patient. No injuries occurred during the fire. Burn ban back in place. Pecos County Emergency Management Coordinator Jesse Dominguez and County Commissioners decided to put the burn ban back into effect at the group's regular meeting on March 22nd. The burn ban was lifted on January 23rd after a 180-day span of the burn ban being on before the decision made at Monday's meeting. Dominguez stated at the meeting that the Keachum-Byram drought index for Pecos County is at an average of 590, 10 away from being a severe drought region. The KBDI is a designed drought index specifically for fire potential assessment. It is a number representing the net effect of evapotranspiration and precipitation in producing cumulative moisture deficiency in deep duff and upper soil layers. It is a continuous index relating to the flammability of organic material in the ground. The drought.gov website also indicates that 83% of Pecos County is abnormally dry, an indicator for a potential increase in grass fires. City cleanup canceled. The Fort Stockton City Council met in regular session on March 23rd and voted to skip the city-county cleanup customarily scheduled for the last 2 weeks of March and the first week of April. Council members also approved the city's final audit for the fiscal year ending September 20th, as well as numerous other routine agenda items. City Manager Frank Rodriguez first discussed the new city landfill, saying it was almost finished and they project it will be functional before the end of the calendar year. He said the current landfill is almost at end of life and would not be equipped to take on the amount of trash generated in the regular city-county cleanup. Because of this, Rodriguez requested the cleanup be canceled in the coming weeks. According to Rodriguez, other options would be to either divert garbage to Odessa or to risk overfilling the current landfill. Both of these would be too costly to consider, and the council voted to cancel the upcoming cleanup. Instead, citizens of Fort Stockton will be allowed to bring their trash to the landfill themselves, free of charge, with the presentation of their city utility bill. Public Works Director Aaron Ramos said most of the work remaining on the new landfill was in-house building, including constructing an on-site shop and running a water line. The new facility is also awaiting delivery of scales for installation. Ramos stated their arrival is expected by June. Rodriguez assured the council the latest construction would be finished in August. In other business, the council presented certificates of recognition to Ramos, Director of Finance Maria Rodriguez, and Assistant City Manager Jesse Gonzalez. They also voted Rosie Holland to replace Heather Pass in the Fort Stockton Downtown Association and approved $132,500 to Redneck Metal Buildings for construction of the new recycling center. Finally, the council approved a resolution to appoint and set the pay rate for election officials, to set the minimum number of election clerks, and to designate the early voting ballot board for the May 1st municipal elections. A&M System Can Save the Struggling Saul Ross, by guest columnist Roland Gutierrez. Saul Ross State University in Alpine should be a shining star among Texas universities. Instead, over the last several years and under various leaders, Saul Ross has struggled mightily and enrollment has steadily declined. After spending literally hundreds of hours over the past few years visiting one-on-one with alumni, current students, faculty, local business owners, and others, it became apparent to me that drastic action needed to be taken. Therefore, I filed Senate Bill 522 that would transfer Saul Ross from the Texas State University system to the Texas A&M University system. This has nothing to do with the current leadership or anyone specifically in prior leadership. This is about saving a struggling university that has languished in one system by moving it into a more robust, financially stable university system. There are some people who are telling the community that any slide in enrollment is recent and due to external circumstances. That is just not true and cannot be backed up by data. The numbers do not lie. From the fall 2009 to the fall 2019, Saul Ross enrollment declined by almost 20%. The retention rate has failed to reach even 60% in quite some time. Saul Ross has the second worst 6-year graduation rate of any university in the state. Furthermore, the fact is the admission lacks the ability to orchestrate the dramatic turnaround needed because it has the lowest endowment in the system by nearly $100 million at just over $17 million. Additionally, the falsehood that the Texas A&M University system is again the transfer is against the transfer, is completely made up. No state employee is allowed to lobby for or against. Their job is only to react to the policies set by our state legislature. I have personally spoken to the chancellor, John Sharp, and he has made it clear that the system has no position, but it will respect the will of the legislature. By merging with the Texas A&M University system, we would bring Saul Ross State University, where there is a synergy across several major areas of study, including range management, veterinary science, energy, and archaeology. Rather than standing alone with virtually no money to effect a turnaround, the university that should be the shining star of West Texas would have a home in a healthy, well-managed, results-driven system. This would be a win not only for the students and faculty, but also for the entire Alpine community and the region at large, serving as an important economic driver for current and future employers to start and grow successful businesses. Even with the transfer, there will still be lots of work to do. I'll be there with my sleeves rolled up, doing everything possible to save this struggling university and reestablish it as a premier university for local students, as well as students across the state and across the country. COVID-19 active cases stay low in Pecos County. By Nathan Heuer. 2 weeks after Governor Greg Abbott's executive order went into effect, COVID-19 active cases continued to stay low in Pecos County. The county had 6 active cases on March 10th, the day the order started, and the number has gone no higher than 8 since that time. On March 23rd, it was reported that there were 5 current cases in the county and 5 pending. As of March 19th, there was 1 Pecos County resident hospitalized outside of the county. As active cases have maintained at a low level, vaccination rates have gone up in the past 2 weeks. There are now 3,476 people that have been fully vaccinated in the county with two dose shots, the Moderna and the Pfizer vaccine. A total of 208 people have been vaccinated by the Johnson & Johnson single-dose vaccine. That puts the county total at fully vaccinated as of March 23rd to 3,684 people, which is approximately 30% of the 16 and older population in the county. The number could be slightly lower as there have been around a couple hundred out-of-county citizens that have traveled to receive the shot, according to Pecos County Memorial Hospital CEO Betsy Briscoe and Pecos County Emergency Management Coordinator Jesse Dominguez. U.S. Gonzalez announces $3.3 million in grants. U.S. Congressman District 23 Tony Gonzalez last week announced over $3 million in grant money from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services for health center clusters in the Texas 23rd District. Grants will be awarded to the following health centers within the district. A grant will be awarded to Cactus Health Services in Fort Stockton, and a grant to Presidio County Health Services in Marfa. As we continue to combat the pandemic, local health centers have become more important than ever. These funds allow for critical investments to be made in our communities, specifically to our medically underserved and rural populations. I applaud the Department of Health and Human Services for directing a significant amount of funds to the health centers in our district, said Gonzalez. Five notable buildings built by John Oates by Barbara Kipchen, Pecos County Historical Commission. In Volume 2 of Pecos County History, John Oates' daughters, Ruth and Mary Elizabeth, wrote of his coming to Fort Stockton and of the buildings C.S. and John Oates Construction Company erected in Texas and New Mexico. Also, archival articles in the Fort Stockton Pioneer detail the buildings erected in Fort Stockton. In 1911, John and his father's construction company built the First Methodist Church at a cost of $16,000. At the same time, C.S. Oates bought four sections of ground outside of Fort Stockton on the old Alpine Highway. John homesteaded adjacent land and reported in the Fort Stockton Pioneer. On February 4, 1927, page 1 of the Pioneer has a column concerning building of the present Fort Stockton Depot. The old one burned down in 1925. John Oates, a former Stockton contractor, was awarded the contract for building the depot. On June 29, 1928, the Pioneer headline on page 1 was City Council lets contract for City Hall and Fire Station to C.S. Oates and Son. The buildings are on 2nd Street is still used. The Pioneer reported on February 14, 1930, that the contract to build Fort Stockton Pharmacy was awarded to C.E. Oates and Son by Pioneer druggist John Rooney and will be completed in 60 days. The old Fort Stockton High School on 2nd and Cold Pits has a plate on the right side of the entrance that lists C.S. Oates and Sons as the contractors. The date is 1931. In the early 30s, John built his town home on Cold Pits. He later built the rock house on North Cold Pits for his daughter Mary Elizabeth and her husband. It is made of stones from the demolished railroad roadhouse. They had to be cleaned of layers of smoke that covered them from trains. His ranch house east of the Chancellor's shipping pens on Old Alpine Highway was built by him using rocks from the Holy Hills about a mile away. He was a stonemason before moving to Fort Stockton. Oates was born in 1887 in Erath County and died in 1963 in Pecos County. Pecos County People. Vega provides area coordination through pandemic by Nathan Heuer. When the COVID-19 pandemic hit the nation and Texas last March, the region's hospital preparedness program specialist, Connie Vega, had the previous experience to help her thrive in the trying time that lied ahead. The California native entered the emergency preparedness career field in chaos from day one. In 1994, Vega's first day on the job with the American Red Cross was the date that the North Ridge earthquake hit. an event that caused at least 57 fatalities and over $20 billion in damage costs. And it just so happened that a mix-up in her job role on that day led her down a career path that she thrives in and is passionate about. When I started, the earthquake hit that morning, and then I went to work. I got thrown into emergency preparedness. When I started, they confused me for the mapping coordinator, and so I did mapping coordination for about 2 days until they realized I wasn't supposed to be there. I was supposed to be in blood services. The earthquake destroyed Vega's home and impacted her life in a big way in the years to come. I wasn't really thinking this was going to become a career, and as I got more involved into it, I realized that I really loved it. It is a passion of mine, Vega said. Everything I talk about is emergency preparedness. I can't help it because I know it makes a big difference in everyone's life. Not too long after, Vega began working at East Los Angeles Doctors Hospital. Once I started working at a hospital in East Los Angeles, they found out that I was organized. They hired me to be the emergency management coordinator there. I did hospital preparedness there. The California native thrived from the start in the industry and subsequently got recruited by Sherman Oaks Hospital in the San Fernando Valley. Vega became the go-to person for her corporate entity, rescuing hospital preparedness program facilities. If a facility was in trouble of losing their grant, then they would get me to go in and educate the staff and create an education program and implement plans, she said. 5 years ago, Vega moved to Texas after being hired by the Border Regional Advisory Council to become the region's hospital preparedness program specialist. Once the pandemic hit in March in the Pecos County area, Vega had already been in discussion with DSHS, county officials, and Pecos County Emergency Management Coordinator Jesse Dominguez regarding a plan to handle such a health crisis. With the pandemic hitting, we began disseminating information via the internet and via conference calls to all the facilities, making sure everyone developed a plan for if it came and affected our region. Once it did reach Texas and we knew our area would be impacted, we started receiving PPE from Texas Department of Emergency Management. Vega coordinated the first shipment of masks and other PPE equipment to Fort Stockton after talking with Pecos County Judge Joe Schuster about renting a county warehouse to store the equipment. This became our strategic national stockpile location for this region, which means the 17 counties. So once we received our first shipment, we started coordinating all the facilities to come down to the location so that I could provide PPE. The Fort Stockton resident went on to say that she can't thank Schuster, Dominguez, and Pecos County Hospital CEO Betsy Briscoe enough for the help they provided to her efforts in getting all facilities the equipment they needed. I want to thank them because they were a huge help in the very beginning. The hospital, Betsy allowed some of her employees to come down to the warehouse once we received the shipment. Jesse coordinated a pallet jack in order to move those pallets into place. As the pandemic evolved, Vega adopted and continuously provided the region with the PPE they needed, including ventilators, hospital beds, and monitors. Now that the pandemic has minimized, the five-year resident of Texas has been able to regain some normalcy in her life after working nearly 10 months straight with no days off. We worked long hours for a long time until we were able to catch our breath, she said. We went through almost a year where we were working every day. We didn't get a day off. I think it was Christmas I took half a day off. Vega is now in the process of returning PPE back to the state as the pandemic winds down. Places to go and things to do. March 25th to 27th. The Comanche Springs Rodeo will take place on Thursday, March 25th through Saturday, March 27th at the Pecos County Coliseum. Bareback riding, saddle bronc riding, bull riding, steer wrestling, breakaway, tie down, team roping, and barrel racing will all take place at the event. Visit the Fort Stockton Chamber of Commerce or visit their website to purchase tickets. April 10th. karaoke night at Nelson Street Theater at 7 o'clock p.m., $10 admission. April 24th, the annual Big Bend Open Road Race will take place on Saturday, April 24th, starting at 8 a.m. The event's car show will be at Rooney Park on Friday, April 23rd from 4 to 5:30, followed by a parade from the park to west on Dickinson to the end of town. For more information on the event, visit the race's website at www.bborr.com/schedule. Items needed for children. New playing cards, dominoes, and soccer balls are being collected at First Presbyterian Church office in Fort Stockton at the request of the Red Cross for use by the unaccompanied minors in Midland. These must be received by noon Friday. Call Jim Miles at 290-2077 for more information. Housing complex ready for move-in. The Fort Stockton ISD Board of Trustees met in regular session on March 22nd. The majority of the discussion focused on updates on infrastructure projects within the district, including the teacher housing complex and changes to Apache Elementary School's air conditioning system. The board also passed a number of Texas Education Agency required waivers and resolutions related to attendance and staffing issues created by last month's winter storm. Superintendent Ralph Traham reported the teacher housing should be ready for employees to move in within a week. The board learned the team overseeing the complex had made site visits recently and were told that any more work on the units would be strictly cosmetic. The discussion concluded with the news that the housing complex was completed under budget. According to Tranum, three FSISD employees are currently on the list to move in, although he predicted the units will be at capacity after the hiring season. The board also heard a report on the plan for the new air conditioning system at Apache Elementary. The team said they had made three or four site visits to the school and planned for approximately 30 units to replace the current system. These units would be located on the roof meantime, meaning they would be no need to do any construction to the classrooms inside. According to the plan, each classroom would have individual temperature control. The team said they will create new ductwork in most places, but will use a small amount of the existing ductwork that is still fully functional. The board was told they should have a price estimate by the beginning of April. In other business, the board approved the Media Honor Roll resolution nominating the Fort Stockton Pioneer and KFST radio station to cover FSISD activities. It also approved a TEA waiver to designate February 16th as a fully remote learning day due to the winter storm, and a TEA waiver for school days missed February 17th to the 19th, since the district was unable to provide instruction because of power losses related to the storm. Where are you headed? A look at people traveling through Fort Stockton by Jeremy Gonzalez. Emerging from their car with sacks of Frisbees, travelers Greg and Garrett were ready to unwind with a game of disc golf at the Rooney Park on March 20th. "We're headed to Austin," Greg said. "I was previously living in Colorado, but for the last 8 months we've been out on the road riding out COVID. I quit my job, quit my lease, and now we're living in the car. No regrets. Cruising is a fun life." Rolling in from El Paso, the friends say they chose to stop in Fort Stockton for its large park and disc golf course. "The course already seems pretty good," Garrett said. "Honestly, we haven't had any time to explore Fort Stockton, but this is a cool spot. You can't play disc golf in Marfa, Alpine, or Terlingua, so this is exciting." The Austin native added his thoughts on driving long stretches between towns. "These West Texas drives are super long. I had a Mountain Dew yesterday, and it changed my life. I don't even need to go back to coffee to stay awake anymore. I'm not even sponsored by them, but I recommend it to those who are driving out here. It'll fill your entire body up with sugar." Laughing out loud, Greg concluded, "I felt like I saw him having a drug experience when he chugged that Mountain Dew. He wasn't the same. But what's important is that he got us to this beautiful park in one place." Obituaries. Elpidio Segaldo Beza entered into rest on March 13th. Visitation was held March 18th at Heritage Funeral Home. The funeral service was on March 19th at Northside Baptist Church. Burial followed at East Hill Cemetery. Arcelia Nieto Garza, arrested in Fort Stockton, died on March 17th. She was 79. Memorial services will be held Saturday, March 27th at 10:30 at Heritage Funeral Home. Graveside service will follow at Fort Stockton Catholic Cemetery. Remembrances and condolences may be shared with the family at Heritage Funeral Home of the Big Bend.com. Bernardo Guevara Leyva entered into rest on March 18th. Visitation was held March 22nd at the funeral home. A funeral service was held March 23rd at Our Lady of Guadalupe Church. Burial followed at East Hill Cemetery. Remembrances and condolences may be shared with the family at the Heritage Home of the Big Bend.com. Javier Lopez entered into rest on March 17th. The visitation was held on March 24th at Heritage Funeral Home. Funeral service was held at Our Lady of Guadalupe Church. Remembrances and condolences may be shared with the family at Heritage Funeral Home of the Big Bend.com.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Monahans News for Thursday, March 25th. Monahans High School placed on lockdown last week after online threat of gun on campus. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. Superintendent of Schools Chad Smith said a lockdown was put in place, quote, in as a precautionary measure, end quote, after messages of a gun on the campus circulated on social media. The lockdown was initiated after Monahans Wicked Pyote ISD Chief of Police Orlando Orona saw a threat of a gun on the MHS campus on a social media platform. The lockdown was lifted last Thursday afternoon. MWP ISD posted a message to its parent message application stating they were, quote, aware of the online threat at MHS. Law enforcement has been notified and we are monitoring the situation, end quote. Quote, Arona is now investigating where the messages originated by obtaining the IP address to see if it is a real account, he said. The students were out of class for lunch on Thursday when the lockdown was put in place. Students were told to go home if they were not back at the school by a certain time. Shortly after students were notified, it was safe to return to school. Quote, it was decided it was best to lock the school down and not let the students back inside until it was deemed safe to do so, Smith said. Once word was received it was safe to allow the students back inside, all the classroom doors were locked and the students placed their backpacks outside in the hallways. MWP ISD implemented a clear backpack policy that went into effect at the beginning of the 2019-2020 school year. Quote, I know the clear backpacks policy was an unpopular decision, but this is one of the reasons we implemented that policy, Smith said. Walker Junior High was also locked down during this time. Quote, we will continue to be vigilant in our efforts to keep our schools and students safe and secure, he added. It was not clear as of press time whether or not anyone was identified as the one placing the online threat. 500 illegal alien minors to be housed at Target Man Camp. The story was written by Brendan Briggs, staff writer for the Pecos Enterprise. The Reeves County Commissioners discussed the federal government plans to house 500 unaccompanied migrant children at a, quote, temporary facility, unquote, here in Pecos during their regularly scheduled meeting on Monday at the Reeves County Courthouse. In an email sent to Town of Pecos City, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, HHS, notified local officials on Saturday that, quote, children under the age of 17 who have no lawful immigration status, end quote, will soon be housed at the Target Logistics Man Camp located at 2310 South Teak Road. Preliminary information indicates the 500 children are scheduled to arrive in early April. Those apprehended at the border by the Department of Homeland Security are too young to be held in a Border Patrol facility, are transferred to the custody of the Office of Refugee Resettlement, ORR, which is, quote, to provide for the care and custody of all unaccompanied children until they are unified with an appropriate sponsor to reside with while their immigration cases proceed, end quote. According to the Unaccompanied Children Fact Sheet published by HHS, in 2020, 72% of the children it handled were over 14 years of age, and 68% were males. Countries of origin were Guatemala, 46%, El Salvador, 14%, Honduras, 25%, and other, 8%. According to the New York Post, U.S. government officials are, quote, scrambling to find bed space for 15,500 unaccompanied immigrant children who have poured across the southern border in record numbers, end quote. The Post states that an estimated 9,400 migrant minors crossed the border in February 2021. Reeves County Sheriff's Office Chief Deputy Ernest Lascano said he first heard of, quote, this at 8 p.m. on Saturday, and we started planning ahead for worst-case scenarios. For law enforcement, that is a very unique situation. We have been coordinating with other local agencies, including the District Attorney's Office. It will be a federal facility, but we will still have to investigate any crimes occurring there. We are all praying it goes smoothly. God forbid a murder or sexual assault happens, but we have to be prepared for the worst case. The federal agencies will work their side. They will be in charge of perimeter. Our main concern is for the safety of our citizens. We will place a dedicated patrol presence in the area. The kids will not be free to go, and if there is an escape, we will respond and coordinate efforts with the feds. Our call volume is still very high, even with the oil field down. There will have to be some overtime pulled, because at the beginning we will treat this like the worst-case scenario, Lascano said. District Attorney for the 143rd Judicial District, Randy Reynolds, said he, quote, met with Ernest on Saturday after Midland County gave us the heads-up, which was greatly appreciated. They were surprised by their situation and gave us some problems to look out for. We are working on our security procedures before the kids arrive. We are looking at a possible walkthrough of the facility as early as Wednesday. This is a united effort across all of the local agencies. We are coordinating with the Pecos Barstow Toya ISD police as well. We are developing differing layers of security. Though only 500 are scheduled to come as of right now, the facility could be expanded to house up to 2,000, end quote. County Judge Greg Holley named Citizen of the Year. The story was written by Paul Cyphers. Ward County Judge Greg Holley was named as the 2020 Outstanding Citizen during Monday's 68th Annual Monahans Chamber of Commerce Awards Banquet. Outstanding Citizen for 2019, Brett Heflin, introduced Holley, and a plaque commemorating the honor was presented to Holley by Miss Monahan's Abby Inman. Heflin described some of the accomplishments and some background information. Holley and wife Kelly moved to Monahan's in 1997 with twin girls. As the years passed, the family grew and now stands at 7 children and 2 grandchildren. Quote, for years, the Holley family has given Ward County a shining example of family values. When he first moved in Monahan's, Greg was like a little boy that didn't know what he wanted to do when he grew up, Heflin said. He served as the full-time minister to the Third and Dwight Church of Christ and also opened an office to practice law. Trying to manage being a husband, father, minister, and lawyer was too much. He then became a full-time lawyer, but he has remained active in his church. He has been Ward County Judge since 2006, and under his leadership, millions of dollars have been directed to road infrastructure, while the county simultaneously building community centers, museums, a new ambulance facility, a new roping arena, and renovating numerous other county facilities. The $24 million, 80,000 square foot event center was opened in 2018. All of this was completed entirely debt-free, and the county remains debt-free to this date. Recently, Greg has challenged his commissioner's court to build within the next 10 years a new law enforcement and new hospital, both debt-free. He consistently goes far beyond his specific duties. The past year, he has kept the citizens of Ward County informed with a daily Facebook report of the impact of COVID to the local community. In addition to his duties as county judge, Holly has found time to serve not only the community, but all of West Texas. It is my pleasure to present our 2020 Citizen of the Year to our friend and County Judge Greg Holly, Heflin concluded. Merit Award winners for 2019, Atlas Sand, represented by Candace Bolin, and the Monahans Police Department, represented by Police Chief Billy Riley, presented the 2020 Merit Award winner, the staff of Ward Memorial Hospital. Bolin said, quote, "When COVID hit in March of 2020, Ward Memorial Hospital, Sand Hills Clinic, and their team of Leticia Rodriguez, Don Hillman, Deanne Bean, Krista Powell, Dr. Sammy Day, Sean Netherly, Holly Francisco, Brandy Wolf, Valerie Smith, and Michael Enriquez quickly assembled this interdisciplinary group to plan for how they would handle the COVID outbreak. Many policies were put in place to increase the safety of the staff and patients, such as patient visitations, enhanced cleaning, PPE, air purifiers, and triage statements inside and outside their facilities. Several patients' rooms were converted as negative pressure rooms and adopted COVID drug protocols to ensure proper treatment of their patients. Their laboratory department implemented several pieces of lab equipment and protocols to detect the virus and antibody testing for the providers to make real-time decisions that were best suited for their patients. Their entire team has done a great job adapting to all the changes through the pandemic, and they continue to work tirelessly in ensuring the safety of our community by providing quality and efficient care." Aliens, Big Brother, Google Earth? The story was written by Christy Sullivan. The little black and white squares painted on the roads around town have caused quite a buzz among Monahans residents, and many to question if Big Brother was watching or had aliens invaded, but the answer is simple: mobile LIDAR. LIDAR is the first step in design process of the fiber broadband network design that will serve the entire city of Monahans, as well as an interconnection into a future Ward County regional broadband network. In their monthly meeting last week, Monahans Economic Development Corporation, MEDC, Board of Directors tasked Half Associates with providing data collection and extraction services using mobile light detection and ranging technology, or LIDAR. MEDC is also working with Faulkner Consulting and NCOM on the planning and design of the Metro Ethernet route. NCOM will prepare maps of the routes based on information gathered from the community to ensure that the proposed route is feasible. The Metro Ethernet topology is the local backbone of the broadband network. Quote, "The mobile LIDAR vehicle will detect the black and white squares on the roadways and use that mark as its target to collect the data from that specific area," Half Associates Party Chief William Griffin said. Mobile LiDAR is performed by collecting data using LiDAR equipment that is fixed on top of a vehicle. The vehicle drives along streets and alleys and collects three-dimensional data points, millions per second, and creates a point cloud. Specific features are then extracted from the point cloud. These 3D features include items such as light poles, power poles, guy wires, overhead facilities, fire hydrants, pedestals, traffic signal boxes, and other above-ground utilities and structures. This information is then converted for use in a design program that is used to create the construction plans and specifications. This network design information also provides a critical component for use in network operations. Data collection will begin on Monday, March 29th. MEDC will pay Half Associates 12 cents per mile for data collection, estimated to be 75 miles, and 40 cents per mile for the extraction services, estimated to be 25 miles. Construction on the broadband project is expected to begin in the summer. Here is an obituary that appeared in the Monahans News on Thursday, March 25th. Charles Ray Phillips, age 51, passed away on March 13th in Monahans. Charles was born in Monahans on May 21st, 1969, to Nora Spencer and Linda Phillips Cobb. Charles graduated from Monahans High School in 1987. After graduation, he went into the United States Army. Charles is preceded in death by his father, Nora Spencer, maternal grandmother, Pinky L. Thornton, maternal grandfather, Horace Phillips, paternal grandmother, Farney Thomas, and paternal grandfather, Preston Spencer. He is survived by his mother, Linda Cobb, sister, Sissy Phillips, brother, Fabian Butler, and wife, Italy, and a host of nieces, nephews, and cousins. Viewing will be held from 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. Friday, March 26th at Harkey Funeral Home. Funeral services will be held at 2 p.m. Saturday, March 27th at the Monahans Event Center with Reggie Brown officiating. Burial will follow at Monahans Memorial Cemetery. Visit our website, harkeyfunerals.com, to sign the guestbook or leave a personal note for the family. Funeral arrangements are under the direction of Harkey Funeral Home.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texas. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.